Let's see what the stew has for us today.
Welcome to the Gnomecast, the Gnome Stew's tabletop gaming advice podcast. Here we talk with the other gnomes about gaming things to avoid becoming part of the stew, so I guess we'd better be good. Today we have one of our newest gnomes, Wendolyn, and myself, Ange. And we're going to completely skip over our Get to Know a Gnome segment because the whole episode is going to be about getting to know Wendolyn. Welcome to the stew. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hey, Ange. Thanks so much for having me today. I am a freelance writer, developer, and game designer. I've also done a little bit of editing work, and I'm a lifelong role player. So far, I've worked with Post World Games, Gallant Knight Games, Yellow Piece Games, Analog Letters, and Ulysses North America. Mostly, I'm focused on role-playing games, obviously, and I kind of go across the board on what I like. So two of my current projects are Wrath and Glory, the new Warhammer 40,000 roleplay, and Torg Eternity. I've written an adventure for the Living Land sourcebook. So those are more crunchy and rules heavy, but I also deeply, deeply adore story games and indie games. And one of my other recent projects has been to write a protocol for Post-World Games, which is all story-driven, GM-less game that I'm very excited about.
Yeah, I've heard some interesting things about protocol. Tell us, how did you get into role-playing games? What's your origin story?
My origin story takes me way back to the time when I think I first started reading. And I'm a second-generation gamer, so my dad was my first GM.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, we started playing AD&D first edition in the late 1980s. So at this point, I've been gaming for 30 years, which is kind of crazy.
It sounds like we probably started gaming around the same time, though I was probably a bit older.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, my dad was basically like, here, honey, hold these dice and roll them now. You know? So yeah, that was a really easy start to gaming compared to what I've heard from a lot of other people. And for a long time, I got to skip out on the satanic panic because, you know, no one was burning my role-playing books. It was only when we started to reach out to friends to come play with us that I started to find out that, oh, people don't really talk about role-playing in public in the early 90s.
Yeah, they're terrified of it.
Yeah. I'm so thankful for where we are today in 2018, where, you know, there are billboards for live play podcasts on like the street and people are just happy to talk about D&D Adventurers League and whatever.
Yeah, it's I think the worst I ran into was my mom just one day out of the blue asked, isn't that game satanic? And I was just like, Mom! And that was the end of it. And then I had the mother of a close family friend was like, when are you going to put down those stupid things and start focusing on your real education? And it was just like, oh yeah, I'm just going to ignore you now.
Oh my gosh.
Luckily, I never had to deal with any of that too majorly.
Yes, my mom gave me a little bit of the squinty eye and said, never get so attached to a character that if they die, you want to kill yourself. I'm pretty attached to some of my characters, but I'm still here, so I think it's going to be okay.
I think you're okay. How long after you started playing? Because it sounds like you started playing really young.
Yeah.
How long after you started playing did you start GMing?
So I've had like an off and on love hate relationship. Well, I won't say hate. It's a love on and off again relationship with GMing. Probably the first time I GM'd was in a pseudo role playing game. So we had the HeroQuest board game, that came out again in like the late 80s or the early 90s. And my sister and I both took time to write and run scenarios using that board game as our kind of playing space. And then I ran my first D&D game, I think when I was in middle school, just again for my dad, my sister, and maybe some close friends. And then I really got back into GMing and feeling comfortable with GMing when I found games that didn't require me to stat out monsters. because that is not my jam. Like, if I can make it through a role-playing session with never picking up my dice, that's the way I would love to go.
Yeah.
So, Gen Con in 2009, I found the Dread RPG with the Jenga Tower, and I thought, oh my god, this is the perfect game for me. So, I bought that Got a Jenga tower, and then I went to town, and that was what got me started back again. And just finding from there story games and GM-less games where you facilitate but don't have to have the pressure of like planning everything in advance. That's really what uplifted me from a player to a GM.
I found in the late 80s and early 90s that a lot of GMs treated what they did as the sacrosanct, you know, thing that only the most elite people could truly do. Because you needed to stat out everything. And if you didn't stat out everything, you weren't doing your job.
Right.
You know, so it was very intimidating to cross that line back in those days.
Yeah. And for me, like, I consider myself a rules follower. If there are bounds of rules, then I feel like I need to be an expert on all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm not, like, that's when I start to wonder if I'm worthy of doing the thing. And so with games where there is no expectation to plan everything in advance and know exactly where the story is going to go and have that all, like, basically memorized, that's where I feel comfortable operating. You know, get away from that. Get out of that headspace where I have to know exactly what's going to happen. And the story just flows, and it's freeing. It's awesome.
It is. It is. Once I found some of those type of slightly more freeform games, it opened up a lot of doors as far as GMing goes.
Yeah. Oh, and I should probably mention also that I also helped to run plot for a LARP back in the early 2000s when I was in my early 20s. So that, again, you know, there's rules, but it's not stat blocks. It's like, okay, know how many hit points you can take till you fall on the ground. And everyone has equal responsibility when they're playing an NPC to keep track of their own stuff. So that's cool too.
If I remember right from reading your bio, that was the Nero LARP?
Yeah, that's right. So a friend of mine, Dustin, started his own LARP chapter, I want to say 2002 or 2003, Nero Empire. We were out camping with some friends, and he was like, we're going to do this thing. And he was like, do you want to be on plot? So I was young and naive, and totally it was like, yeah. And it was awesome, but except for the part where you sleep in NPC camp with all the dudes who snore like they're sawing logs.
It's like camping and cosplay all meshed together.
It is, and it's totally an amazing time. And it was just a great experience, and I love LARPing. I don't feel like I have time to do a continuous LARP anymore, but I love convention LARPs, and that's something that I never thought. When I started going to conventions with my sister, she wanted to sign up for LARPs. And I was like, okay, you know, I've done this thing before. But convention LARPs and one-shot games can be just so intensely satisfying because all of the drama happens in that 3 or 5 hour span of time. And so it's very cool.
Is there a difference between the types of games you like running and playing? Because it sounds like you truly do have a love of both the crunch and the story in different ways.
Yeah. So for me, like, the satisfaction that I derive from playing a game is really about, like, the interpersonal relationships and the long-term planning and scheming. So for me, it doesn't matter what the system is, really. It's really about the people that I play with and the game masters that I play with. And if they are responsive to what I'm putting out, that's the perfect game for me. So I've been playing in a Warhammer 40,000 RPG for 6 years now. Yeah, every other week for 6 years. And so that's a pretty crunchy, the FFG system is pretty crunchy.
Yeah.
But I just adore it. And, you know, I've had the same character for forever. And I mean, in game, it's been decades. So these long-term plans that are finally paying off now is just like so intensely satisfying. So I'll play any game with the right people.
Yeah, I think that's really the way to look at it. I know some people who get like, no, I like this game system. This is the game system I'll play. It doesn't matter who I play it with. And I'm like, but it's the people.
Yeah.
It's the people you play with.
Yeah, and I've tried to like keep that from getting in my way. Like at the start of this year, my friend Quincy wanted to run us through Tales from the Loop. And I was like, man, another system. And now I'm like so deeply hooked because I love the character that I'm playing, Harrison, and I love the relationships because you set up relationships all around the table. Of course, you know, because you run Tales from the Loop.
What archetype is Harrison?
Harrison is a troublemaker, but he's a troublemaker with a heart of gold. He's trying to keep his parents from getting divorced, but he's doing really bad in school and got held back a year. And yeah, he's deeply in love with Senda's character, who is the popular girl. And that has turned out just very, very badly. I won't trouble you with telling you all about my character, but it's amazing.
I do really like Tales from the Loop. It's got some awesome setup in it. And it's like, yeah, I understand what you're saying about, you know, oh God, another system to learn. But yeah. It's once you figure out the bits to do to add to roles or help boost roles, which can be a little confusing, it's a relatively straightforward system.
Yeah, and I say in a lot of cases, you know, my favorite game systems are the ones that provide me with something interesting to grab onto when it comes mm-hmm. to mechanics, with critical failures or just amazing, you know, explosive successes. And it's like, okay, now I appreciate the system. It's not getting in my way. It's adding to the narrative. It's adding yeah. to the fun. I think Savage Worlds for me is another huge one for that because, you know, a lot of times when you roll the die and say you roll a die 20, roll it once, you either succeed or fail and that's the end of it. Like that's very anticlimactic for me, even if you have an amazing success. But in Savage Worlds where you have exploding dice and you can just, you know, I've seen people roll 50 or 60 on a die six and it's just like, when you sit there on the table, and everyone's like, oh my God. And you're like clapping and just like, I can't believe this is happening. And people are laughing or crying or who knows what, you know, that's like, this is the best, you know, that's where the system adds to the game and makes it even better.
Yeah. I appreciate that Savage Worlds for that. Mm-hmm. I know locally we've got the Western New York Savages who put on like monthly game days at various game shops. And so I try and get down there and play whenever I can. And it's that exploding die is just so satisfying sometimes.
Yeah. And the bennies too, because you get to signal to everyone at the table and your GM, like, this is important to me either as a player or as a character.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking of a game session we played middle of last year in a setting that my friend Ron Rickenbach created called Mask of the Incarnates. And my character was a father who had lost his wife and child. And there came a scene where the other characters are getting ready to fight or something. And there are children in these rooms and there was only one room we knew we could protect. And so I spent all of my bennies moving the kids to this one room we could protect without waking them up.
Oh.
And for me, being able to spend those bennies and show everybody this is like the most important thing and I will spend everything I've got to make this happen was just very, again, satisfying.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
So let me ask you, what led you from GMing? Because there's a degree of design work that comes with GMing when you're creating session, you know, scenarios and setting up sessions and all that. But what led you from that to becoming a full-time game designer?
Gosh. So in late 2016, I was just kind of putting myself out there. And that's networking is my superpower. So I say I game and I know people. And so I had gotten to know Jim Pinto from Post World Games, and he said he wanted like a business person. And that's what I am. I'm an accountant and an MBA by training. And so I started talking with him on the business side of things. And then he wanted to pull me in on the design side of this game called NM156 that I just ran at Breakout Con. And so I did that. And it was just, I guess it was more development work there, not design. But you know, it was very much uplifting to say, hey, you can do this one thing, but I think you can also do this other thing. And then from there, I started doing just like Kickstarter stretch goals and design work and, you know, doing my own games and, well, starting my own games, none of which are out there yet. But anyway.
They will be.
Yeah. So like the first real paid design work I have done has been for Wrath and Glory with Ross Watson and Ulysses North America. And so I got to work on the corruption rules. So in Warhammer, as you get exposed to more and more horrors of the warp and whatnot, your body and your mind can become physically corrupted. So I got to work on those rules independently, which was terrifying because I kind of thought that they would say, hey, we kind of want it to go like this. Now go flesh that out. But that was not the case at all. So my expectations were one thing. And then they're all like, hey, here's the word corruption. Go do something with rules with this.
Here's the deep end.
Yeah. So that was an amazing and uplifting shock, but it worked out. And I would just say, you know, like, hook on to those things that you feel like will make the player experience different and more interesting, and then find a way to make the mechanics serve that. But yeah, so that was kind of my origin story for game development and design. It was just about a year of time in between when I started working with Postworld and when I quit my full-time job and started doing game design and development full-time.
That's really cool. Can you give us a sneak preview on one of your upcoming projects?
Let me see. What kind of preview are you looking for?
Something that's going to make our listeners want to keep an eye on this and get it as soon as it comes out.
The big project that I'm working on is Wrath and Glory. And so the exciting stuff about that is, so it's a D6 dice pool system, which is different than the prior 40K RPG. It's much more rules light. And it's also, as a source book, a core book, broader and more inclusive. So when we say that in Wrath and Glory, you're able to play not only characters from the Imperium of Man, but also from the Xenos races, the Eldari and the Orcs.
Ah.
So we're also updating the timeline to coincide with Warhammer Tabletop 8th Edition. So it will be set in the Dark Imperium after the Warp Storm has ripped across the Imperium and separated humanity from the bulk of its resource, which is people. And so it's going to be more desperate, you know, than ever. And I think that that's really interesting because, you know, the core for me of being a player character is finding that hope and that sense that no matter how small I am, I can make a difference. And I think this even ramps that up to 11, because in the Imperium of Mankind, most of the time you just think like, well, if I fall, someone's going to step into my place, right? The one thing we have is people upon people upon people. But now human life or whatever is, you know, a limited resource.
It's become a precious resource.
Yeah. So I think more than ever, you're like, okay, if I don't make this difference, if I don't whatever, like that's... The Imperium might fall. You know, we might lose this foothold. Chaos might get ahead. And yeah, so I'm really excited to play in it. It's going to come out for public playtest, or not playtest, but public availability at Origins 2018. And
Sweet.
Yeah, there will be a free RPG Day rules release. So, and that's in June as well. So watch for that.
That's pretty cool. So let me ask you, what can the readers of Gnome Stew look forward to seeing coming from you in the form of articles in the near future?
So I work with the Denver RPG Meetup, which is a meetup.com group that's been running in Denver for over 11 years. And we have about 2,500 role players and 5,000 game sessions played in that time. So a lot of my knowledge and experience comes from that. And so one of the things I like to see is people finding their people and getting more games to happen and expanding their palette of what kind of games they're interested in playing. One of the things that I'm writing currently is an article about writing a convention description to get the people you want.
Ah,
because that's one of the things I've found is, you know, I sign up for games at conventions months in advance, like the day that they open, I'll typically sign up for games. And then I get to the convention, I have no idea what I'm playing until I look at the tickets again. And, you know, having gone to conventions for, you know, 10 plus years, there are things that I can see that people bring to the table that they were thinking that this was important, but they didn't tell that to me as their player. And so we had a mismatch of styles, whereas they wanted to maybe geek out over Harry Dresden in a Dresden game, whereas I wanted to dive in deep and tell my own story and not think about what Harry Dresden did. But anyway, kind of writing the con description so that you spark that interest in the people that you want to have at your table. So if that means that you want to have mature players versus like all ages, or experienced gamers versus teaching rules, or if you just want to have people that are either more focused on the role play or more focused on the mechanics, you know, I think all of those things, if you can get the right people at your table, you're going to have a great time. People are going to have a great experience, and they're going to leave that game with a big smile on their face. So setting those expectations in the con description, and then following it up when you welcome people to your table at the convention. So you reset those expectations and say, hey, this game's going to be more focused on story and role play, and it's all about telling an interesting story or what have you. I think those things for me are so important. So that's one of the articles I have coming up.
I'm definitely looking forward to that one, because that is definitely a key. I've seen the disaster that happens when a GM wants to run a particular game, but their write-up draws, I don't want to say the wrong type of player, but not the type of player they needed to run that game.
Right, exactly. So I think, and one of the other things that I love seeing, and we've seen a lot in Denver, is people using keywords as a very short, you know, descriptive way to say, hey, this is what this is about, you know, and whether that's mature 18 plus, or like giddy fun, or like pulpy or horror game or story game, you know, there's a lot of quick keys that you can put out there to say, this is what my game's about. If that's not for you, you know, keep reading. There will be something else.
Awesome. Well, I think we've hit about the point where we should end, or we're going to start making Chris mad at us going too long.
No worries.
So let's give a special thanks to our Patreon backers, awesome gnome supporters like Chaos Generators, Mark Monday, and the lovely L Owls. Thanks to their help and others like them, this show is funded by the Gnome Stew Patreon. You too can become a Patreon backer by following the Patreon link on the Gnome Stew website to the Gnome Stew Patreon. This ad brought to you by The Winter That Never Dies. I mean, seriously, if the snow would stop showing up, that would be great. Just really great. If you're enjoying the Gnomecast, you'll probably like many of the other Misdirected Mark shows. Here's another one to check out.
The Wednesday Evening Podcast All-Stars. Brett, Tom, Kevin, Chris, and Emily get together and play games that get edited down to an audio drama for your ears. Join this crew of all-star players that create stories from the games you love.
You can find us at GnomeStew.com, at GnomeStew on Twitter, and GnomeStew on Facebook. Gwendolyn, where else can we find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at Gwendolyn Reichel, and same on Facebook, Gwendolyn Reichel. And Ange, where can we find you on the internet?
You can find me on the Twitters at Orikes13, O-R-I-K-E-S-13. Also hanging out in the Misdirected Mark community on G+. You can usually find me over there. So, Gwendolyn, do you think we avoided the stew this week?
Gosh, I sure hope so.